back on cannabis. You know, we got off it a little, but not much.
Back on cannabis. Right.
Cannabis, 102.9 FM, not necessarily cannabis, but that's what we're talking about. Barb, we talked a little bit about the possibility of cannabis being a gateway drug like alcohol is, and you expressed earlier that you saw it almost identical to alcohol, with the exception that the side effects weren't so glaring, so hurtful, maybe so physically damaging in many respects.
And we don't have the outcome of that particular statement yet.
Exactly.
We need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, jury's out, and that's what I put in one of my ads this week, was that, folks, I'm not going to argue. I'm thanking you so much for your input so that we get all kinds of views out there, and you know, lest we get angry at each other, we can really get going somewhere in a positive vein. And if we fight, nothing gets done. But if we express and get it all on the table, you know, eventually we'll have a real good solid way to live through cannabis and to take the benefits even as far back as you and your husband, as you related.
Right.
You know, this is not a new thing. The only new part about it is the recreational allowance of its use. So the fact that that is the case, you know, and you or I or anybody who does what we do, that's really the only problem, is the recreation, for many people turns into an escape that becomes a habit, becomes a behavior, that becomes an addiction if they're geared that way. And that's what we're trying to prevent. So alcohol versus cannabis. Give us a little bit of your sense of that, Barb.
Well, and those are all very good points. And again, you see, in my mind, being an alcoholic, and I guess, which will maybe help my viewpoint on this, I should tell you that my husband, who passed 4 years ago, was in a rock and roll band. I had a recording studio in my basement. You know, my life was all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, because that's what that is. Yeah. So, you know, for those of you who may be out there going, well, what the heck is she talking about? She doesn't know, right? I am very familiar. Yeah. And it's not that I didn't do drugs in my earlier days. Because I did. But again, cannabis was not something that ever did anything for me, because again, as I said, it put me to sleep. So I thought, well, who the heck would pay money to just go sit in the corner at the party, right? You're certainly not the life of the party. But again, I know enough other people who, and even today, that do cannabis for many different reasons. Okay. Again, you know, when I started drinking, and I didn't drink until I was much older in life, and that was because I grew up in an alcoholic home, so I saw the devastation and I felt it, okay? I knew what it created. So again, you know, as soon as you put something that alters your consciousness into your body. So it doesn't matter whether it's alcohol or whether it's cannabis or what drug it is. The bottom line is you are still creating the same issues, and those issues become, how attentive are you to the reality that's going on around you? Are you actually responsive? I mean, you know, they've got all the commercials out now. Can you smoke and drive? And the answer is no. Because, again, they have already found that your responses are slowed. So you are not a safe driver at that point. Yeah. When you take that further and take it into your family, do you have kids? What example are you setting for your kids? Are you responsive to what's going on with them? Or are they just a nuisance to you at that time, so you're smoking more because you don't know how to deal with that? Because, again, it's your escapism.
Exactly.
And for all of the stuff that we do, it's because we want to escape. People who don't drink and who don't do drugs, they're not trying to escape from portions of their life. you know, it's like you said, you know, when you have that world conference, right? Those people have now learned how to cope with life on life's terms without any additives to their system. They can have a good time without having a smoke or a drink or whatever else your choice of thing is, right? You learn that, you know what, life is pretty darn good, but I need to participate, right, instead of running away.
Yeah, and it does work, you know, and the beauty of that system is all based on coming out of the closet almost, you know, and at first with your own people, you know, or those you can identify with.
Mm-hmm.
But my push in this world is to get beyond that identification so that the person with the overeating problem can learn from something you use to get a handle on your alcoholism.
Absolutely.
And it's the only thing that that person over there is going to be able to use. So if you, with the alcoholism, don't share your experience, strength, and hope outside the walls of the alcoholic.
That's right.
Then who's not going to make it? So,
exactly.
So that's another whole area. But the escapism is the place I wanted to stay for a minute.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's not too much that is done in a compulsive, overdone, if you will, in this life that doesn't have a form of addiction attached to it. So in other words, if I exercise to where my sweat and my pain and all the stuff going on in there, is able to get me away from my facing myself in a mirror in reality or even thinking about the problems I have in life, whatever it is.
Right.
If I use that to escape, and even if my body becomes, you know, unbelievably what I think it should be, you know, I built it on escape. Now, what is that?
No, but that is, but that is still escape, because how many of us can actually look in the mirror and say, I love myself.
Yeah.
And really and truly mean it.
Yeah.
And you need, you know, that's a starting place. And, you know, you go from there to then, when you love yourself, number one, you have respect for other people.
Yep.
You choose to not look at what's wrong with them, but go, oh my goodness, how can I help this person? There's somebody out there struggling, right? Yep. I mean, I look at, you know, others and I go, I don't care who it is I meet in my life. That person has the same basic needs that I have.
Yeah.
They want food on the table, they want a roof over their head, and they want to be cared about by another individual in their life. Those are three basic, just, you know, I'm no better than you are, I'm no worse than you are, it doesn't matter how much money, you know, there is or there isn't. Those are basic needs, and we all have them, and it doesn't matter what color your skin is or where you were born or anything else about you, right? And when you're trying to, normally, we're not accepting of ourselves, of what's going on in some area of our life. And that's what creates that escape.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing, you know, in alcohol, in AA, they call it stinkin' thinkin'.
Yeah.
And that stinkin' thinkin' basically is because you're busy comparing yourself to somebody. And when you compare yourself to somebody, you never compare yourself to somebody who doesn't have what you have. You always compare yourself to somebody who's got more than you do, and then you start into the, poor me, I don't have this, I don't have that, blah, blah, blah. And you start wallowing in this place of pity that you have no place being, because you've got a good roof over your head, you've got food on the table, and you've got lots of people who care about you, but you're too busy saying that person's a pain in the ass and they don't get off my, you know, case, and they're always you know, boy, we are a really sad state of affairs.
That's right. Poor wretched me. Poor wretched me. I've only got $1 million in the bank, you know what I mean? But anyway,
right,
you know, faith, hope, and charity, you know, we all, those words ring clear, especially this time of year. We hear a lot about charity. Charity and love are the same thing.
Yes, they are.
You know, and, And love is me stepping out of myself. And that is the hardest thing in the world to do. What's his name? C.S. Lewis said years ago, you know, he's a Christian writer for those who don't know him, and a famous one. And he said, I don't think I've ever had an unselfish thought.
No,
and you know, and I thought a lot about that, and that's a guy that's so highly respected in the realm of you know, faith and so on.
Right.
You would think, well, this guy's got to be the most honest guy around, and he is. His honesty says, you know, when I trace every thought back, it's selfish.
Of course it is.
It always is.
It is. And our trinity is usually me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
That is how we live.
Yeah.
And when we look at our world and what's going on around us and our marketing and our advertising and everything else, it promotes it to continue to be me, myself, and I regardless.
Yeah.
And it needs to change to, what can I do for you? How can I help you? How can I be of service?
And that's the bottom line. And to make the decision that you're going to serve in a certain way, whatever way you decide, but, and you make that decision that come, you know, hell or high water, the only way I can express it, you're going to go there and do that thing, no matter how rotten you feel, because it's the right thing to do. And that is the only way I can do an unselfish thing, you know.
Absolutely.
And even in that, even in that, I also know, and you know, in the back, in the deep subconscious, lies the place that says, "But Scott, when you do that, you know you're going to feel so good, and you're going to be lifted, and so on and so forth. Why are you really doing it?"
And what does that come back to, Scott? Me, myself, and I. I'm still serving myself, but I'm doing it by helping somebody else. And and the key thing that you said there to me was, I made a decision. Because you have to just decide. If you leave it up to your feelings, you know, I mean, I always describe feelings like a tree. You know, there's the roots in the ground, which is what the solidity of who I am really should be. But my feelings are like the branches of the tree. And so when the wind blows all over the place, and who knows where I'm going to be today.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't rely on my feelings. I need to rely on my roots, and my roots are my decision making, and it's to do the next right thing.
Yeah.
Period.
As opposed to the next thing that's going to make me feel the best.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree totally. And that decision making, by the way, even for those who maybe like me deep down know that certain things, and I can honestly say this, I've never gone into a jail and had a meeting, even if I was kicked out in 1 minute or 50 minutes or 2 hours, and you know what that means, because it can happen.
Absolutely.
I still go away fulfilled for every time. And we're talking thousands kind of thing for me now, you know what I mean? Like, over all those years, and I've never left a meeting without seeing something positive happen to somebody else.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's all I need.
And it's just one person. Like, if we can, you know, we're not meant to go in and, you know, have this miraculous thing of everybody get something.
Yeah.
This is, and life is about one person at a time.
Yeah.
And then that person is one person at a time. Yeah. And that's how it grows exponentially.
Yeah.
But you're not expected yourself to be this wonder, whatever.
Yeah.
You just need to share and be caring with one person.
Yeah.
And if that person then shares their caring with another person, that's how it grows, and that's how we get better.
I think it's that secondary sharing, and I think Patty mentioned it earlier too, that, you know, the sharing that we do fixes us.
Absolutely.
To the best we can be fixed, sort of thing. So the reality is, what you do that doesn't feel selfish just helps us anyway. It makes life so much nicer. So, I mean, you know, why not do that?
Absolutely.
Why not do the right thing?
Yeah, and it keeps us in reality, you know. When we drift away, we will revert back to our natural bad habits.
Yeah.
And we've probably practiced them all our lives. And, like, you know, maybe some people don't really get that. But the bottom line is, you know, anything that you do over and over is a habit. So, you know, you may not want to say I have all these bad habits, but, you know, for me, I practiced, like, for me, lying was part of how I grew up because that's what I learned in my house, right? I've had, I'm not going to say the number of years because that's going to tell you how old I am and I don't care to go there, but I'll just say more than 30 years of practicing lying.
Yeah.
Right? And so when I don't stay within my program that I have found and I work what I need to, which is the thing that has produced change in me to not allow me to be an active alcoholic, then I revert back to, no, I don't maybe have a drink, but I start to lie again. And they're, you know, they may start out as little lies, but then they'll end up being big lies, like because it just goes back, you go back to what you know the best.
Yeah.
And what you know the best is normally what you've learned in childhood, number one.
Yeah.
You didn't, it worked for you in childhood, right? Because it was a protective mechanism. But as you get older and you start out into the world as an adult, then, you know, there's things coming at you that aren't sitting right and you're going, why is this not working, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't recognize, because you're so used to it, right? Somebody either needs to point it out to you or you fall into addiction because that's the way you choose to cope with it. And so then it just is this great big snowball that just eats you up in the end.
Okay, hold that snowball, Barb, and we'll take a quick break before we come back for the final run. Patty,
perfect.
All yours.
Yeah, we'll be back with Share the Burden after these messages.